League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you stayed up late, you saw it. Houston Astros getting the victory over the Angels. Convincing victory. 10-run ruled them. 10-0 win in Anaheim. Framber Valdez was outstanding. Carlos Correa had a day where everybody's ready to pay him $400 million. Home runs from Marwin Gonzalez. Jose Siri led it off with a bomb. It was a good day to be an Astro. Astros were kind of letting the Angels hang around, though. They exploded for 4 runs in the 8th, 4 runs in the 9th on their way to the 10-0 win. A's lose. Magic number is down. White Sox lose. It was a good night for the Houston Astros an evening ago.
No doubt about it. They're closing the gap where they need to and also expanding the gaps where they need to. So they're building their lead on the White Sox. They're basically done with the division. And now, even though the Rays won, you still know that you want that number between you and the Rays to be 3 or less, because then it's an either all or nothing, go for it situation when you have those final 3 games against the Rays in the last week of the season. But if you can get to that point, you got a chance. I mean, that's worth looking at, because that's when you can actually do what a lot of NFL or NBA teams do at the end of, down the stretch at the end of the year, and go, do I want to win the division but play a team that we match up very poorly against, or do I want to match up where we have a lot of areas of domination, we should have an easier time of it. And if you have the choice and you decide your own future, then you're in the driver's seat. So no matter what, you're in a good position. But now, where a week or two ago we thought there was no way you could even fathom the idea of catching up to the Rays for the number one seed, now it's within your sights. And if you just keep handling your business against these bad teams, and you won't see Ohtani pitch during this series, so that's a bonus, that if you can do what you haven't been able to do consistently all season long, but handle your business against bad teams, you could find yourself in a really good ideal position going into the playoffs.
And the Astros also, you have to consider that they would need to win the series against Tampa Bay. If they win the series against Tampa Bay, it means that they win the season series against Tampa Bay as well, because they already beat them 2 out of 3 in Tampa. So then they would have the tiebreaker. So then it's not so much surpassing them, it's then just meeting them. So it is something that's still in play for the Astros. I don't know if I necessarily want it. I don't hate the idea of playing Chicago in the opening round in the ALDS. Like, to me, Chicago's a little more appetizing. It is a first-round opponent, especially if Rendon's hurt, than the Blue Jays, who have been just red-hot, maybe more than the Yankees, who, if they get in, they still have Garrett Cole, who could potentially pitch 2 out of 5 days or 2 out of 5 of those games. So I like where the Astros are at. I'm not sweating that top spot in the American League.
Well, like you mentioned, the key news last night was not only did the White Sox lose, but they lost Rodon again, and he's got arm soreness. And that's never a good sign for the one possible advantage the White Sox have over the Astros starting pitching. So the fact that if the White Sox are going to be dealing with pitching issues, then you really don't mind seeing the White Sox, because especially if you have the home field and you know the deciding game is going to be at Minute Maid, then you're in the driver's seat either way. And ideally, you just want to have the easiest road to get to the championship series again so you can handle your business and do what you need to do, as opposed to having to overextend yourself and use a lot of pitching in the process of getting wherever you need to go. So you're right. I mean, look, the only reason why I like the one seed is because in a one-game playoff for the team that's fighting to play you, they're going to burn one of their best pitchers. And that's an advantage in itself. So I like to just kind of weigh it out, and obviously while you're weighing it out, that means keeping an eye and monitoring on what's going on with the White Sox and their injuries, as opposed to just basically saying, hey, look, I'd rather face this team than that. There's a lot to have play out here in the final games of the regular season, and so you're in a good spot. You're in a way better spot than you thought you'd be when you were losing to bad teams a couple weeks ago, And now you're in a spot of going, you're not in the number one spot yet, but yet you're in the driver's seat because it seems like you've got a lot of control in your own destiny going, this is, if I want this or want that, I can get there.
It's not a guarantee, though, that like Gerrit Cole would go in that wild card game because the Yankees are going to be in a position in probably Toronto and maybe not Boston as much where they're going to have to win pretty much every game down the stretch. So it just might depend on how it maps mm-hmm. out and schedules out. Now, you are going to have to throw another bullet in that wild card game no matter what. So that's an advantage for winning a division as opposed to being a wild card. But looking at this Astros game yesterday, to me, the storyline was Fromber. He's coming off, especially coming off the cut on his finger. Like, you didn't think it was going to be serious. Just a minor cut, pushed back his start a couple of days. You felt good about, you know, that the injury wasn't severe, but you also have to see it. You actually have to see him on the mound before you really feel confident. I think Fromber yesterday, especially early in that game, was efficient. He wasn't walking anybody and still went 7 shutout innings and struck out 6.
Well, you know what I always tell you. When you're analyzing Fromber, the first thing you want to do when you analyze Fromber is, what's his secondary pitches doing? Mm-hmm. What's his breaking pitches doing? If he's placing his breaking pitches, if he's got good break and good location, you're going to get good Fromber. And good Fromber is better than most. And last night, you had good Fromber because even when he was getting hit, they weren't line drives with high velocity off the bat. They were dribblers. And seeing,
sometimes there were errors that were ruled hits.
Yeah, or seeing eye, you know, grounders through the infield through the shift. You'll take that all night long because you know what? His pitch count was low, his efficiency high, his ability to stay away from getting good contact against him was good, and he got good support. So even though the Astros probably left too many guys on base after they scored the initial 2 runs, they still gave him more than enough. And then when they needed the pad, lo and behold, like we talked about, this lineup is so good 1 through 8, you don't know exactly when the machete's going to pick and choose his moments to try and show up offensively. That 3-run bomb could not have come at a better time because now, instead of kind of a really tight game where you knew you were going to burn Presley and you were going to burn, you know, Graveman and you're going to do your regular save situation game, you got yourself a nice pad where Dusty could kind of take a deep breath and go, man, we don't have to do a whole lot here and we're going to get a victory.
Yeah, with Presley throwing 3 days in a row, he wasn't available. Stanton got put on the paternity list. He wasn't available. So you wanted Fromber to go deep to save the pen. They did. And then you got the cushion as well. So you could throw Christian Javier was up there for a second. They gave the debut for Martinez as well. Then Daly Raley just continues his dominance.
Stop it.
He's been outstanding.
I knew you were going to say that because you were tweeting about that. The ball that he hit, that Ohtani hit.
It's an out.
The look on his face told you, oh, bleep.
I think he thanked the heavens after that.
Yeah, he really did because he, as much as he tries to be a religious guy, he had some things come out of his mouth, whether they were audible or not. You could read his lips and go, he's thanking his stars right now that he didn't give up a bomb to Ohtani.
It was 3 up, 3 down, Joel. 3 up, 3 down. Brooks Raley continues his dominance.
Here, Jeremy, you want him on the line? If you got one inning to get outs in the playoffs in a high-leverage situation, you feel comfortable with that guy coming in?
He was brilliant last night. He's been great in September.
Yep. We did not answer the question.
Here's Dusty Baker after the game yesterday on what he thought of Fromber Valdez.
Well, what impressed me was his strike zone command early in the game. You know, he had a very low pitch count. Up until about the 6th inning, and then he ran into trouble in that 7th inning, and it was getting a little touchy there, especially with Ohtani coming up next and with with Fletcher. You know he's going to hit the ball, put the ball in play somewhere. So, but he got out of it by great play by Carlos, and you know, he had an outstanding breaking ball, and you know, he had his rhythm big time. It's the best game. That was similar to the Fromber we saw last year.
Very good for Fromber yesterday. To me, he cemented his status as a top 2 pitcher on this playoff rotation. Game 1, Game 2, Lance McCullers, Fromber Valdez, in any order, I don't care. Jose Siri was given the leadoff spot in the game yesterday. He leads off the game with a home run, which begs the question, certainly deserving of a spot on the playoff roster, right? It's going to be interesting. You're going to leave off a player on the ALDS roster that you might feel deserves a spot. Like, it's either going to, like, to me, I've looked at it, you're going to look at either one guy that's not on this playoff roster that is a combination of, like, Jose Siri, Marwin Gonzalez, Phil Maton, Christian Javier. Like, you probably have to leave off one of those guys, maybe 2.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, it's like the flavor of the week, though. I mean, you suddenly decide because he's been hot lately that he's the guy, but when you think about it more from a versatility standpoint, he has all the tools of a guy that has multiple factors that can really help Dusty Baker because he's got great speed and he can play a good defensive outfield and he's got some pop, and at least until, I don't know, maybe they get better scouting reports on the guy and they see him a little bit more, he's obviously seeing pitches that he likes and doing something with them. The way Chaz McCormick kind of has fallen out of graces a little bit, and because of the fact that Jake Meyers, and I guess Dusty is just going to keep fooling around with him and tinkering with him.
Pinch runner yesterday.
No, that was big.
Jordan.
I'm sure that was helpful.
10-0 game.
Yeah. Which, of course, I'll never understand. And all of a sudden, Marwin's his flavor of the week. I mean, it's like he has his security blankets, and Marwin pays off with a grand slam after the game was already decided that Dusty, I'm sure, will use in the analytics department when he says why he keeps putting him in the lineup. But Dusty's going to Dusty. And one thing we know is he's got favorites that maybe aren't our favorites or the logical choice, but he's going to make them. That's why I keep telling you what it really comes down to is who gets the final say? James Click in the analytics department or Dusty Baker as the manager of this team? Because you know already during the course of the year there's been conflicts between those two.
Yep.
And lines drawn in the sand, and that they don't agree on much. So I would believe in my heart of hearts that they're going to lean from an analytics perspective on Siri because of his versatility, whereas I believe Dusty is going to lean on guys that he has already decided he trusts more and guys that have been there, done that for longer. And that's where it's going to be a little dicey when they start deciding to figure, you know, fill out that playoff roster.
Now, you could keep both of them in the ALDS roster because you don't need as much pitching as you would in the ALCS because you're playing 5 games in 7 days as opposed to 7 games in 9 days. So you could go with 14 players, 12 pitchers, and keep both of them on the playoff roster. I lean Jose Siri over Marwin Gonzalez. He's a lot faster. He can play every outfield position. He's got the pop. Marwin Gonzalez should never be starting a game against right-handed pitching at all. I mean, if you look at his numbers, there's no reason he should be in a starting lineup if it's a game of significance. Yesterday's game, not a huge game of significance. If you think that the Astros are in a comfortable spot, I think Dusty Baker put Marwin Gonzalez in the lineup yesterday as an audition to see if he's worthy of a playoff roster spot. And I think that's why he was in there. In a game of consequence, there's no way Marwin Gonzalez is starting a game against a righty. We mentioned the A's lose, so the magic number is 7. Did you see how many people went to the A's game yesterday?
I thought it was in Tampa.
4,068.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that you talk about the epitome of fair weather. Tampa and Oakland are very similar in the fact that people don't give a rat's ass during the regular season, but all of a sudden when it's a playoff team, then it becomes must-see baseball, and they got to get there as fast as they can, and that's pretty weak sauce when you start talking about it in the grand scheme of things, but that's the way they've gotten accustomed to doing it in Oakland and Tampa. But that's embarrassing when you've got a team that's on the cusp of trying to get into the playoffs, and they need every single victory, and they need a home field advantage in a dump of a building as it is, and they can't get enough people there to fill up one baseline near the home plate area.
I wish they'd moved to Vegas already. Poncho on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, he's saying that he wants Jose Siri to tone down his home run antics. He's tired of him pimping home runs. I kind of like it. I think it brings a little attitude to this team. I don't mind it at all.
Did Poncho then also leave a message that says, get off my lawn?
I will say this, though. If he gets drilled in the back, you had it coming. I'm fine if you do it, but you better understand that you might get a fastball between the numbers the next time you're up, too.
There's a difference between a bat flip and a stand-and-watch flip.
He did that 2 nights ago.
That's what I'm saying. So it's one thing if you get it good to just kind of give a little extra to the bat. But when you sit in the box and watch it and the catcher's watching you watch it, note taken. I mean, they're going to remember that, and at some point it's coming back at you. So you're right. I mean, look, I don't say stop doing it, but I do say be careful what you wish for, because the more you watch, the more you're going to start watching them come at your tailbone.
They both homered last night. Marwin Gonzalez, Jose Siri. If you have to pick one to be on the playoff roster, who is it? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Reports are out on Tyrod Taylor. Going to be out a month. Now what for the Texans? Next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Amazon Eric, wouldn't it make a little more sense to put Siri on the ALDS roster since the team we play won't have very much tape on him? Kind of gives him and us an advantage. I think it's a good point. I don't think anything that comes into play whenever it's either Dusty Baker or James Click or both of them working together – when putting together the 26-man ALDS roster. I don't think they're going to be worrying about how much tape is out there on a guy. Like, Siri's getting enough at-bats now where you can break it down a little bit. To me, it comes with Siri speed. I think they're going to want the athleticism of Siri, although there's a way you can kind of maneuver the roster, have 14 position players, 12 pitchers.
We'll see. A difference in versatility, right? One guy plays multiple positions in the field. And the one thing that I kept telling you when they went and got him is, one thing Dusty can rely on is he will put bat on ball. He's not going to be a big swing and miss guy. He may not be a high average guy, but when you need someone to at least get be a contact hitter, Marwin's capable of doing that. But Marwin's going to be able to play multiple positions for. He's got a cannon for an arm. But offensively, it's basically, it's not hit or miss, but it's hit, but whether it gets through or not and how hard he hits it is a different story. Whereas with Siri, you realize he's got pop, he's young, he's athletic, he's got a ton more speed than Marwin. He's not going to play the infield like Marwin. He can play the outfield. But if indeed you have Aledmys Diaz available to be your utility guy for the infield and possible outfield, then Marwin, the need for Marwin diminishes greatly. And because we know that the platoon right now from an outfield position is basically just four guys, now Siri's put himself in the mix, that Dusty needs a little bit more depth in the outfield. So he's probably going to lean that way. And for the long-term success of this franchise, Marwin's been there, done that in the playoffs. So you already know what you got, and he'll be ready whenever you call on him. But I kind of agree that Siri would like to get his feet wet in the playoffs so he knows what it's like, and it's, the moment doesn't get too big for him.
What side are you leaning?
I'm leaning Siri because of Diaz.
Yeah, I'm leaning
because
Siri,
of Diaz.
Too.
Diaz also, so Marwin has essentially become... We used to say Diaz was a poor man's Marwin when Marwin left. Now, Marwin is a poor man's Diaz in the fact that he doesn't hit as well as Diaz. And so as long as you got Diaz that could do so many things, now you need the depth in the outfield with Siri and a pinch runner.
Yeah, I'm leaning Siri, too. Better athlete, younger. I've seen Marwin Gonzalez enough this season to don't think I can really rely on him. And I also think there's an outside chance that Jose Siri could start a game, whereas Marwin couldn't. Like, I could see Jose Siri starting a game against a lefty because Brantley's not a very good hitter against lefties. Now, Marwin hits lefties all right, too. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Reports are out on Tyrod Taylor that he's going to be out. Looks like 4 weeks with this hamstring injury. Looks like there's a really good chance he's going to land on the IR, because why not? I mean, in the NFL nowadays, you can put an unlimited amount of players on the IR. You can bring back an unlimited amount. They just have to miss three games. If you have a four-week injury, place him on the IR, open up room on the 53-man roster, bring up Jeff Driscoll, and I think that's the solution for the Houston Texans in terms of, like, who is your backup quarterback going forward. The question now becomes, like, now what? And they're not going to do anything before Thursday. That's just too quick of a turnaround, too quick to, like, get a guy onboarded it into the organization. I think if they're going to do something at the quarterback spot, it could be something that happens after Thursday, where you have 10 days between your game against Carolina and then your following game after that. I still don't think that the Texans are going to do anything. I think they're going to ride with what they have. Davis Mills has already been named the starting quarterback for Thursday. They drafted him in the third round. This is a team that Nick Caserio has flat out said, we're going to, you know, look at the process, not so much the results. In our words, embrace the suck. I think this is a good chance and a good opportunity to really get a good sample size on Davis Mills, a good evaluation, a good scout on what you have, find out more about the player, and then go on from there. I don't really see any sense in bringing in another backup quarterback anyways. Like, can you find an upgrade over Jeff Driscoll? Yeah, you can. Why would you? It doesn't really matter, right? Like, if you find somebody better than Jeff Driscoll, what are you really aiming to do? Win a couple more games? Like, are you trying to go 4-13 as opposed to 3-14? Like, I just don't see the benefit of actually doing that. So I think that the Texans are going to play this by the book. I think they're going to place Tyrod on the IR. They've already announced Davis Mills the starter. Jeff Driscoll will get called up from the practice squad, and there are your two quarterbacks the rest of the way, unless there's an injury or when Tyrod comes back.
Well, I agree with you. I think that the other thing is that you obviously know from a lot of different things we talked about as frequently as yesterday, the fact that they now have a built-in excuse to do exactly what Caserio wants them to do because of the way he's already set the table for you, that wins and losses don't matter. It's just the effort and staying in games, because they realize that embracing the suck allows them to get better quicker and get higher draft picks and be able to capitalize more. So with all those things into consideration, they don't want to get too good. Now, you also, like you said, you need a guy, even if it is Driscoll for the short time, at least he knows the system, he knows the playbook, he knows what he's supposed to do. It would be impossible to think that they're going to bring in someone off the street and get them ready to play and that he would give you a better chance than Mills for this week. But that's why, exactly like you said, once you get done with Thursday night and you've got that extended period of time to rest, recuperate, and reset, you can reset if you wish to, with a different veteran quarterback that you get in the building, you give him a crash course on the offense, and you see if he's better than Driscoll. But I just think there's too many things that they're not going to release to the public, the media, the fans, that they're thinking internally that leads them to believe this is the ideal situation. We see what we got in Mills in real game situations where it's not vanilla defenses. And at the same time, if he loses, so be it. It's probably the best thing for this franchise because then they don't have to try and fake the league out by saying that they're really trying to win games. And they do what is essential for this franchise to get better quicker, which is lose games.
Look, and a lot of like the narrative is, let's find out what Davis Mills is. Can he be the quarterback of the future? Like, that's going too far for me. At this point, I just need to see if he can be on an NFL roster going forward. Like, can he be an NFL backup for the next few years? Because if you have a top five pick and you do fall in love with a quarterback at the top of the NFL draft, nothing Davis Mills is going to do is going to change Nick Caserio's mind on a potential quarterback that he likes. So if he does go the quarterback route in the 2022 draft and falls in love with a Rattler or whoever the case may be. I hate even mentioning the names because we don't know where it's going to be in 2022. Like, can Davis Mills be the backup to that quarterback? Like, that's the first hurdle that he needs to climb for me. I'm not even entertaining the question of Davis Mills being the quarterback for the future of this team. I'm entertaining the question, can Davis Mills be a backup for what you hope is eventually a franchise quarterback?
Well, and that's what we've been talking about. You have been a little less high on Mills than me, and I like competition. So regardless of how you see the potential long-term fit of Davis Mills, or if you don't see him having any ability at all, because they spent a third-round pick on him, they're going to keep him around for a little bit. And so even if there's another quarterback that you end up drafting, competition is going to bring out the best in the guy, then whoever steps up gets the position and has earned the spot. And so I like the fact that whoever's coming in doesn't have a cakewalk, and if Mills wants to prove that it's actually supposed to be him as the guy, then step up, put your big boy pants on, and do something when you're, you know, in the limelight and really on national TV, the only thing going Thursday night. What better way to say, hey, look, I'm not an afterthought here, but you know what? Play your ass off on Thursday night and show you know what you're doing, and the preseason, as scattered as it was, you learned from last week, and this is exactly where you want to be. You can, you know, some guys have the ability to finally just kind of put it all together when they're being called on and the pressure mounts on, you know, it's basically now your spot. It's your turn. This is your one shot, Eminem. And you know what? After you throw up mom's spaghetti, if you can regurgitate the offense and keep the ball moving, you got a spot.
It's also good business to groom young quarterbacks. I mean, it just makes sense in the NFL.
It's the Patriots' way.
If Davis Mills shows that he can play in this league and you still fall in love with a quarterback in the top five of next year's NFL draft, then you trade him for a second or third rounder and you get a decent return for what was a third round draft pick. So, I mean, it's just good business in the NFL.
But Caserio grew up, Jeremy, in the Patriots' way.
Yep.
Ryan Mallett. You know what?
Jimmy G.
Before that, it was Matt Cassel. You could go all the way down the list, whether they trade him and get something for him, or they end up being a guy that either fills the, you know, an injury and steps up, or at a certain point they walk in free agency because, look, they gave him value and then it was too expensive to keep him. That's what New England guys do. That's what you would expect Caserio to do.
Does Tyrod Taylor ever start a game for the Texans? 713-780-ESPN ever again. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, ESPN's Bomani Jones joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the great program that is Cars for Kids. Go to carsforkids.org right now or call them 713-225-4226 because they can help you. If you've got a vehicle laying around in your driveway, in your garage, in your backyard, maybe it's not even working, it's collecting rust and dust. You don't want to pay for a tow truck. You don't want to put more money into it, especially if you're not getting anything out of it. Now you don't have to. You get in touch with carsforkids.org. They're going to come to you. They're going to tow it away for free. If you can't find the title, they will. If it's not working, they'll take it away and get it started. They do all the dirty work. You reap all the benefits. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, $50 Visa gift card. It's also a tax write-off. So you already got three ways that's coming out positive for you. Then they're going to take that car or truck or trailer or bike or motorcycle, whatever you got, and they're going to turn it into resources for kids trying to get a second chance at an education. It's a phenomenal program. The kids maybe don't have the money for books or bus fare. Now they do because of your donations. And then they focus on getting their degree, and all the donations stay here at the Houston Can Academies where they help the kids to get where they need to go. So it's all local, and it's a great charity, and it's all fueled and driven by your donations. So if you have a vehicle and you've been thinking about getting rid of it, or you think you can possibly make a donation, please get in touch with them today. Again, 713-225-4226 or carsforkids.org. As always, right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We go now to the HRMP guest line. Bomani Jones of ESPN is joining us. Bomani, thanks for coming on. You have Houston ties, don't you?
Yeah, I grew up there.
What part?
I grew up over there by Willowbrook Mall.
Okay. Yeah, that's right there in the area. What's your outsider point of view of the Texans so far this season, everything that's going on in the offseason with them?
I mean, I got to say, before Tyrod got hurt, they looked a lot better than I think any of us could have imagined that they were going to look thus far this season. I've always thought that Taylor is a legitimate NFL starter. Like, probably not going to Super Bowl with him, but he is a starter. And I thought that he would provide a value, if nothing else, by just comporting some professionalism if the team wound up being a disaster. But thus far, that has not been the case. Now, I don't know what in the world they're going to do out there with David Mills for the next however long it's going to be. But, I mean, I thought the team so far has looked better than it had. And then the other stuff, I mean, come on, I see the same stuff you do. We're looking at the same things.
But, Bonnie, look, I've coined the phrase embrace the suck for the franchise, and it's hard for the fan base to want to accept that because you obviously want your favorite team to do great every year. But for Nick Caserio, and in the best interest of the quickest rebuild possible, this is probably the ideal scenario for them because he's already hinted that, hey, look, it's not going to be the results here this year are not going to be gauged on wins and losses. It's going to be effort and kind of like Sam Hinkie did in Philadelphia with the Sixers of trust the process. And so this kind of sets them up so that they don't have to fake it to make it. But where are you on the fact that this team, obviously Deshaun or no Deshaun, they need to kind of press the complete reset button, and this is the perfect opportunity when you have all your draft picks back to get the highest draft picks possible?
Yeah, I think there's something to it. Like, I also think that you got to put a professional product on the field. Like, I think if you're going to ask people to spend money to watch you, then there is an obligation to do this. Like, the Astros went through the same thing, and of course it wound up paying off at the end. But in that year where they were having the dispute with the carriers about the cable station and literally zero people were watching games because they were so terrible, I think that the team advocated is at, I forget which word I was going to go with. They messed up though and they did wrong by the people. What I would be worried about right now if I'm the Texans is simply they're going to be really bad in a year that doesn't have a quarterback. And that's got to be disappointing. Like, if they really stunk last year, it could have really paid off. I don't see a guy in college football this year that you can, like, put your eye toward and make you feel good about the fact that your team is terrible. Like, you know, I grew up in Houston in the time of the Oilers, and I remember the Save the Oilers rally that, like, 60 people showed up to, and we basically gave the team away. My understanding is that the situation is different with the Texans, that people have a slightly different investment in it. But this is a city that, like you don't exist if you keep putting out stinkers. And it looks like they're going to put out a run of stinkers.
Bomani Jones of ESPN joining the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And the frustrating thing when you look at that quarterback position, and maybe for some it's not so frustrating, is Deshaun Watson is on this roster. He's on the 53-man roster. What do you make of the Deshaun Watson situation, and how would you handle it if you were the Texans?
I mean, what I find interesting about the fact that he's not playing is they have gotten away without having to say why he's not playing. Like, that's the part that blows my mind. We can make all the assumptions that we want, but the truth is there would be two plausible reasons for them not to play him. One of them would be simply to preserve trade value. The other would be to, in effect, put him on the commissioner's list without putting him on the commissioner's list, which stops there from being a headline about him being on the commissioner's list and, like, resuscitating the story nationally in a way that currently is a bit dormant. But what an interesting set of timing for all of this, that when he decides he wants out, all this other stuff happens to a point where people's immediate conclusion was, well, the Texans must have put this out and he stopped and thought about it. And we're like, well, actually, they don't have anything to gain from doing that. And now they're just stuck in this really bizarre sort of purgatory where you hear the whispers about people thinking, well, yeah, if he gets traded, there'll be this and there'll be suspension or whatever it is. But nobody really has any true handle on what's actually going on here.
Well, and the rumor is now that there was a wink-wink handshake deal. The Texans are doing the NFL a solid by saying, we're not going to play him. As long as, you know, you don't, because I keep making the comparison to the Trevor Bauer situation, saying if the league was smart, which we know they're not, but if they were smart at all And they saw what happened in baseball and said, hey, when the Dodgers were ready to play Bauer before anything was settled, the league stepped in and said, no, you're not. That's what the league could have done when he showed. You knew he was going to show up because he didn't want to get fined. But right after that time, someone should have stepped in and done it. Now that they haven't, that's why this can't go away as a national story, and it's still a circus at Texans practice every day, because the story can't go away until someone has the you-know-whats to step up and take the bull by the horns.
Yeah, but I think they're willing to let it be a circus in Houston and not be a headline on ESPN. Right now, it's not a headline on ESPN. I did a commentary about it, this show I do with Bob Costas on HBO, and I've done some stuff like on my podcast about it. But like, if you go around and look at the major sports outlets, it's still not really a discussion. And that's the part that I think that they are ultimately trying to avoid, because what happened to them that I think is a little different than some other cases that we've seen come up is that the number of allegations is the most damning thing with Watson at this point. Like, what you're asking for is us to believe that 22 people are lying. Now, I am inclined to believe that some of those 22, there's a good chance that some of them are lying, because once something like this builds up, then additional people who pop up are more likely to be con artists, because the con has been laid out if you want to play it. But you want to tell somebody that it's all 22, that's hard to do. But none of the 22 have actually been like fully investigated or adjudicated. So what that means is, as of now, Deshaun Watson is absolutely also innocent until proven guilty stuff, because no guilt has actually been proven, except you have to ignore what most people would deem to be common sense. And they're trying to figure out, everybody's trying to figure out how to balance those two things, because technically he hasn't been charged with anything. You know, all you've got is accusations, and what is the power of an accusation? Fair question. Power of 22 accusations? He can't play. That's what the power of that is.
But Bomani, here we're talking about Bomani Jones of HBO as well as ESPN. As we get into this a little bit deeper from the situation, this is what frustrates me and why I said it just needs to go away. No general manager in their right mind, because all it takes is one of those 22 to go the wrong way. And now if you're trading for this guy, you've got bigger fish to fry. You've got other issues you have to deal with. And that's why for everybody that wants to get their clicks and say, hey, a trade could be coming now, before the draft, before the season, before the trade deadline, what general manager in their right mind is going to put their future on the line and give away the big package that everybody says the Texans have to get in return, when there is no clarity? And if Deshaun's not going to have to talk about it till 2022, there won't be any clarity by the time a trade needs to be made. That's why I think it's just so comical. Everybody keeps coming up, oh, Deshaun could be traded soon. The Dolphins are interested. Why would they, when they don't know when they're going to get their guy and what kind of charges he's facing?
So I agree with you and don't agree with you at the same time.
Okay.
And the reason is this. I agree that if I am a team, I am not going to make that move. General managers, though, they can be a bit sociopathic about these things. So if you don't have a quarterback and they tell you you can get this quarterback and he's, what, 26 now? And he's one of the seven or eight best quarterbacks in the league, but he's not going to be able to play for half the season, right? If I don't tell you what any of the background stuff is, I just give you that math right there. This league is full of general managers who make that trade. The owners are the ones that I have the question about, and it's not about anything with the morality surrounding the allegation. It's about whether or not NFL owners want to tell players that you can walk in here and demand a trade and we have to give it to you. Because that would change the world order of the NFL. That is where the NBA is absolutely different than the NFL, which is, guys in the NFL, you can walk in and ask to be traded, and you could be Aaron Rodgers, and you could be out here playing right now after you demanded that you wind up being traded. That's the thing I think that the NFL does not want to have happen more than any of that other stuff. Man, we talk about Antonio Brown like that stuff never happened. People can get past that stuff, or at the very least, the media machine around this is willing to ignore all of those things. But what they can't have is players saying, I'm going to tell you where I'm about to go.
Newest Killer Bee, Bomani Jones, joining the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Get away from Texans talk for a moment. 2 weeks into the NFL season, what's your biggest surprise, good or bad?
I mean, I did not expect the Carolina Panthers to be 2-0. Now, granted, I don't feel like they've really played anybody, and I don't think we know exactly what the Saints are or are not going to be. And I mean, they ain't had no coaches for that game. Like, I'm assuming the coaching matters, so at least enough to where you lose them all, then it might affect your performance. But I knew their defense was getting better. I did not think that defense was going to be good as it has looked in the course of the first 2 weeks.
All right, let me switch gears from you. From a Houston perspective, you mentioned the Astros. We keep talking about the fact they're doing what everybody seemingly thought couldn't be done, and most people don't want to be done because it's the Astros. And I said in order to validate everything of the past and put it behind them and really put everything to bed and prove that they're just damn good baseball players, they got to win it all this year. They got a shot. What's your perception of where the Astros sit currently and what they've done this season?
I mean, I think they're the best team in the American League. Like, I'm somebody who leans pretty heavy on run differential. Like, I think it matters a lot. They got the best run differential in the American League. I really, like, I did not grow up as an Astros fan because we moved to Houston when I was 7 and I already had a team when I got there. But I am a giant Dusty Baker fan, and I would love nothing more than to see Dusty Baker come out here and win a championship. Like, look, the Astros got doing what it was that they did. I get to a degree some of the fury that you hear about it from other places, but we're not going to pretend like this has not been a loaded squad for the better part of the last 5-6 years. Like, we just can't do that, right? Even with whatever you can say about that other stuff, you can question that championship, but you cannot question how good they've been in baseball in the course of this time. And it will be interesting if they do come out here and win it, because I think that I don't think that people were nearly as offended by what the Astros did as they made out to be. But they became the thing that people get mad at, right? We rotate between our things that people get mad at. That was the thing that people decided to get mad at. It was a very easy target, and they went and jumped on it. They leaned in, and people liked to go to games and boo, and they became it. All of a sudden, Astros games became a whole lot more interesting for people because they got to go there and be mad at something. You know, at some point, that'll pass, and maybe it doesn't. I enjoy watching people be mad just because somebody else is successful. That makes my day, haters.
I think it mattered, too, that they won the World Series. Like, if they win 70 games and they find out that they were stealing signs electronically in 2017, no one would say a thing.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right, I got to ask you, because you're not in town anymore, but you spent a long time in town. What do you miss most when you're not in Houston anymore?
Man, this is wild, because I've been gone now for like 25 years. And every time I come back, I'm like, whoa, this is an entirely different place. The one thing, though, and I don't know why this is the one that is persistent above all else, Taco Cabana. Like, that's the one where I have not gone to it. Like, all the different cities that I've lived in, there's no Taco Cabana substitute.
I thought you were going to go Papacitos, and you went more fast food on me.
Well, but see, the thing is, I went to college in Atlanta, and my parents live there now, and Papados and Papacitos there. It's not the same, but it is there.
Yes, it's sense. The chain version.
It's a different experience. I can definitely say that.
Well, Bomani, thanks for hopping
on.
Great stuff as always. You do great work. We're big fans and hope to chat again soon.
I appreciate it, man. You guys be good.
That's Bomani Jones, ESPN and HBO, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Coming up next, dive into this Monday night football game. Packers, maybe silencing the trolls? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Rodgers with Jones floating out of the backfield and dancing in the end zone. Third touchdown. And the celebration is underway. Another Lambeau leap for you tonight.
Aaron Jones had a day yesterday. He saved a lot of fantasy football teams. We'll have our fantasy football weekend failures a little later on in the program. 4 touchdowns for Aaron Jones. 3 of those through the air. Aaron Rodgers bounced back. He threw 4 touchdowns in yesterday's game after that putrid performance that he had in week 1 against New Orleans. 35-17, Green Bay wins on Monday night. Bounce back victory for Green Bay. How you feeling about it?
Not feeling good at all. Tuesday I was afternoon. Telling you during the break, their defense was like Swiss cheese. It's embarrassing that you changed defensive coordinators because you didn't feel last year's team was good enough defensively to get you where you need to go. Basically the same personnel on the roster, and yet Detroit now. I'm not talking about Tampa. I'm not talking about some of the best teams in the NFC. Detroit had their way with you and made you their bitch for the entire first half. defensively, they are going to get exposed by the Niners next week and Kyle Shanahan if they don't tune some things up in a hurry, because Joe Barry, as the new defensive coach, looked like he was completely outmatched and had no clue what he was doing. Evidently, having Aaron Donald anchor your defense makes you look real good and get you another job, but it sure doesn't make you a proven defensive coordinator, because as good as the offense looked, and you expected that. Look, the thing is, everybody was losing their mind about the Saints, and I told you, the fact that they didn't play any of their starters in a preseason game, they had no timing, they had no rut, it was a bunch of rust that they had to get off, and then they're playing in Jacksonville, and so they had no endurance. The offense was going to figure things out when they get Bakhtiari back as their left tackle after 6 weeks. They're going to get even better offensively. Defensively, I don't know how they fix what they've got going on. And it's a bad situation for the Packers right now.
Yeah, they made Jared Goff look good in the first half. I was keeping some notes throughout, and I was like, Anthony Lynn's making Jared Goff look pretty good here in this first half. They figured it out there in the second half a little bit. I had a buddy tell me that Joe Barry might have been the worst coaching hire in the offseason. You agree with that?
Right now, I do. I sure do. Because, you know, I look at Dan Quinn. I look at some of these guys that were hired, you know, at the same time or after LaFleur decided to make a coaching change. Buddy ball only goes so far. Yeah, you were on a staff with a guy, but you were on a staff with a guy, and you have to analyze that a little further. One, offensively, they were going to score points, so that's going to lend itself to you being more successful defensively. And you got the best player defensively on the planet, anchoring your defensive line, and around him, you continued to put players like Jalen Ramsey and other guys that continued to make you look even better. But what do you do schematically, regardless of the players playing the positions, that make you effective as a defensive coordinator? And right now, he's not showing me anything. And it was so vanilla. We talk about preseason being the time for vanilla. He had no concept for Jared Goff, who has a tendency to panic, to put any pressure on Goff till the second half. That's an embarrassment as an NFL defensive coordinator.
Yeah, Detroit's doing a lot of play action, maybe trying to stay away from that a little bit. But like the two turnovers, like if you want to point to that for Green Bay, I would say that's more Goff than it was Green
Absolutely
Bay. I mean, one
was.
Of them was just the fumbled snap, and Green Bay jumped on top of it. The interception, I'm not remembering all that well, but Jared Goff, you know, is prone
to
those mistakes.
And he was panicked
there
on
go,
the
pressure,
run.
Right?
And so I'm saying that's what I was getting to. Now, the slippery ball situation, that's on you, Jared Goff, and you guys should have practiced. And you know when you're playing in the elements in Lambeau, anything can happen. That was completely on Goff, and the replay was great to show it was his underhand on the snap. He wasn't ready for it. He dropped the ball, literally. And that caused those turnovers changed the game. Otherwise, you're in a shootout with the Detroit Lions, but everybody's thinking you could be one of the two teams competing for the Super Bowl to get to the Super Bowl. Everybody that thought that right now should feel completely embarrassed, because that team's not even close.
Aaron Jones lost his chain with his dad's ashes in the end zone of that game yesterday. I never realized that was like something that people did, is wear their parents' ashes. He lost it, but apparently it was found this morning.
It was found at 1:45 this morning by a member of the training staff, and Aaron Jones said, "That shows you just how much everyone around here cares." Aaron Rodgers, take note. Because he was given all kinds of credit that one of the trainers found it in the middle of the night on the field. But then, you're right. I didn't realize it was something that was done either, because Scott Van Pelt, when he was talking to the guys after the game, said, I have the same thing. And I didn't realize that was a thing, that you keep your loved one's ashes in some kind of a container around your neck.
I saw him keep like showing it, but I couldn't figure out what
too.
It was. And I was watching the game on mute because I was watching the Astros game with the volume up, so I couldn't figure it out, but I found out later. Here was Aaron Rodgers after the game saying that he thinks he silenced some people.
I think that there's even more now than when I started playing. There's so many overreactions that happen on a week-to-week basis. So it's nice to come out, have a good performance, and get the trolls off our back for at least a week.
There you go. Aaron Rodgers saying that the trolls are off his back. He thought he was getting trolled after week one and losing to the Saints.
He said more than that, and he said he had to deal with the BS. You asked for this, right? I mean, half of the stuff that went down and why the media is the way it is because you created As the World Turns all offseason. So you're actually laying in your own crap right now.
That's a great point.
So you know what? I don't feel sorry for you. And maybe at a certain point, no matter how much you say you really don't like talking, but because of the Pat McAfee show and all the different things that you do whenever you feel like it's timely for you, no one's believing that BS either. At a certain point, maybe it's better, like Thumper said in Bambi, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. They gave you Randall Cobb, and he has not done a thing. He hasn't even caught a pass yet. So Why don't you just keep doing what you do for a while and take a step back on the media?
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, Randall Cobb's not one of their best four receivers. I mean, he's just a buddy of Aaron Rodgers to be there for him. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go to the HR&P listener line. Rolando's been waiting a while. Thanks for hanging out, Rolando. What's going on? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How's your day going?
Doing good.
Good, buddy. How are you?
All right. I have two questions for you. I know you're not talking about the Rockets, but I just saw a thing about maybe John Wall for Ben Simmons. How do y'all feel about that? And my second question is, I know we're trading Deshaun, and I know we're getting picks and a player, a starter probably. Who would y'all like? I would like maybe a Chris Young from the football team.
Chase Young.
Have a good day.
Appreciate the call, Rolando. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. Chase Young, yeah, you would take him. Washington wouldn't do that. The football team wouldn't do that. I just want the picks. I want the picks. I want the cheap contracts. I want to see Nick Caserio like handle a draft with a full arsenal of picks. That way we kind of figure out more about Caserio. I don't care that much about the players, to be honest with you. It's a rebuild. I don't want to deal with the contracts that are involved with big-name players as well. Give me all the draft picks that you can. Give me as much of them as you can. The higher, the better. That's where what I want to get for Deshaun Watson. As far as Wall for Simmons, yeah, do it immediately.
I've been saying it. I mean, I'm saying of all the offers that are out there that people haven't grasped onto, I said the one offer that the Rockets should make that Daryl should have to consider is the fact that to get better right now, because he's in Philly, he got the big money, Daryl Morey did, and now people are expecting a little return on their investment. And offensively, they can't do that with Ben Simmons. And now Ben Simmons came out today and said, I'm done. I'm not playing another game for the Sixers. I'm not showing up for camp. So, Daryl, that five draft pick scenario that you thought you were going to get back in return for Ben Simmons, pretty much not happening. The Rockets' best deal to help both teams would be a package with Eric Gordon and John Wall going to Philadelphia. Ben Simmons comes back under John Lucas's tutelage with a fresh start, with a bunch of young guys like himself, where he can kind of just fit in and get back to working on basketball would be the ideal scenario for both teams. It makes the most sense. Instead of trying to get a Portland to make a deal with you or a Golden State who said they basically don't want him and Draymond Green on the same team because neither one of them can shoot really well and Draymond's going to shoot it anyway, doesn't make sense. CJ McCollum, if you're Portland and you feel like you finally got to break up that backcourt, maybe you consider Ben Simmons as an alternative to CJ McCollum, but you take a step back offensively unless you surround him with other players. The Rockets could make a deal here, and as much as you're taking on Simmons' salary, he's still so young, and now the ceiling is high, because if you can get him to shoot at all, and I mentioned guys to you in the past, Jason Kidd came in the league without a jump shot. So did Gary Payton. So it's possible. Even recently, when we had guys that came into the league, they had Ball from New Orleans had to reconstruct his shot. The kid from Philadelphia that's now in Orlando.
How about the Greek Freak? You're talking about Fultz.
Yeah, Markel Fultz, as well as Giannis. And he's still working on it. It's a work in progress. So it can be done. But rather than having to sit on all that suck of contracts with Eric Gordon and John Wall, and also having the negative effect it would have on that young team in the locker room, take them out, put a young guy that really wants to prove himself and get into a new location. And I think it makes sense for both parties.
To me, it's a no-brainer for the Rockets. I mean, if you could get rid of the Wall contract, and I don't think it's only going to be John Wall. Like, you need to throw some sweeteners in there. And for your idea, the sweeteners, Eric Gordon, who Daryl Morey loves, and would add a punch to that Sixers offense. And I think really, I think he's a good fit next to Embiid, too, and what they're doing with Philadelphia. From a Rockets point of view, you're getting a really good player. I know it's a really bad contract, and I think that the value of Ben Simmons has been greatly exaggerated by Daryl Morey and perhaps all of the talking heads around the NBA. I think Morey's been trying to trade Ben Simmons all offseason long and realizes he doesn't have anybody interested in giving him anywhere close what he's asking for. And I think he does have to settle at the end of the day, and he could do far worse than a Wall and Eric Gordon for Ben Simmons trade. And I think it's a great spot for Ben Simmons to be here in Houston. I think it's a great spot for Houston to have him, even with the mindset of, hey, let's just showcase him. Let's make him a good player again, and maybe you trade him again at some point.
The problem is the ego of Daryl Morey says he has to win every trade.
Yep.
This is one that I don't think he's going to win. He has to actually put his tail between his legs on this one and say, I need to maximize as much as I can possibly get from a really disastrous situation, because the pressure is on us to stay competitive with the Nets, with the Bucks, with the top teams in the East. Miami already got better, added Kyle Lowry, did some things to try and get better. We got to keep up with the Joneses. In order to do that, we got to win now. Ben Simmons won't allow you to win big now. You need more offense. They've proven that, and you need a real point guard, which they haven't had. John Wall, at least, is a point guard that can actually make Joel Embiid better.
Yeah, and from like a Ben Simmons point of view, like, what's the best Ben Simmons could be? Like, I could see him being a Rajon Rondo, but a much better athlete. The problem is he doesn't have, like, that grit and that fire that Rajon Rondo has, it seems like. But I think Ben Simmons is certainly somebody that can help a good team in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a comparison in terms of someone that ends up getting a decent shot of a small forward position. Because unlike Rondo, he's going to get you a whole lot of rebounds. He was all first-team defense again this year. He can defend almost every position but center. So he brings you a lot more because of his size attributes and his ball handling at his size than Rondo does. But at the same time, both of them struggled with shooting the basketball when they came into the league as well. So I think there's still quite an upside for him. But he also has to accept the fact that, and I've told you this before on multiple occasions, you can be labeled as a max player. But that doesn't mean you're a superstar.
Yep.
It just means your contract came up at the right time and a franchise couldn't afford to lose you. So you have to also get it through Ben Simmons' head. I'm not a superstar yet. What I am is a highly paid player that has to try and live up to what I'm getting in terms of my bottom line.
There's red flags there, but from the Rockets' point of view, it's worth the risk. It's worth taking a flyer on, and Ben Simmons is going to be desperate to kind of, you know, change the perspective of him around the NBA. Coming up next, Carlos Correa is making things harder and harder for the Astros. Next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, right now I'll tell you about Doc Linville. You've heard John Granato talking about him, Fred Fowler. I'm the next stand in line and tell you I believe in Doc Linville because he did for me what he's done for John. He's done for so many others, which I didn't think could be done. I thought that my hair loss in the front was never coming back. My forehead turned into an 8-head, and I thought that there was no chance of me doing anything but showing movies on it. And now I've got a normal forehead back again because I trusted Doc Linville. I went in and trusted the process. It's easy. There's little to no pain. It's natural because it's your own hair. The NeoGraft procedure is taking and relocating hair that's already in your head. It's not a toupee. It's not cream and foam. It's simply put your hair relocated to spots where you need it. And it's going to continue to grow, and it's going to flourish, and you're going to look better, and you're going to feel better because you're going to have more confidence when you look in the mirror. Doc Linville has figured out this procedure better than anybody else. I had the two technicians that were traveling around the country doing this for people, whoever wanted it, wherever they could. Now they're located here in Houston working for Doc Linville, and they'll work for you. Check them out at 975hair.com and see exactly what I went through on Saturday. And then understand that it can actually change your life by changing your appearance. Minimal downtime, 7 to 10 day recovery period means you can still be up and about doing your normal daily functions while the hair is settling in and it's going to start to grow. The reasons why you have this is to increase your self-confidence, your personal appearance, you feel better, you have more energy because you know you look better when you look in the mirror. They do free consultation specials just for ESPN listeners. Normally that's $150. They'll sit down and look at you and tell you if they can help you or not. Based on the location of where you're in need, they can tell you what the procedure is going to actually entail, but they're going to be honest and they're going to get your results with financing available. It's a fantastic process that I'm excited to show you the results on as we go through, but I can't tell you enough about why you should go see Doc Linville today and check out 975hair.com.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.